Chapter 3. After this, Job opened his mouth and cursed the day of his birth. He said,
"May the day of my birth perish, and the night it was said a boy is born. That day, may it turn to darkness. May God above not care about it. May no light shine upon it. May darkness and deep shadow claim it once more. May a cloud settle over it. May blackness overwhelm its light. That night, may thick darkness seize it. May it not be included among the days of the year, nor be entered in any of the months. May that night be barren. May no shout of joy be heard in it. May those who curse days curse that day. Those who are ready to rouse Leviathan, may its morning stars become dark. May it wait for daylight in vain and not see the first rays of dawn. For it did not shut the doors of the womb on me to hide trouble from my eyes. Why did I not perish at birth and die as I came from the womb? Why were there knees to receive me and breasts that I might be nursed? For now I would be lying down in peace. I would be asleep and at rest with kings and counselors of the earth, who built for themselves places now lying in ruins, with rulers who had gold, who filled their houses with silver. Or why was I not hidden in the ground like a stillborn child, like an infant who never saw the light of day? There the wicked cease from turmoil, and there the weary are at rest. Captives also enjoy their ease. They no longer hear the slave driver's shout. The small and the great are there, and the slave is freed from his master. Why is light given to those in misery and life to the bitter of soul, to those who long for death that does not come, who search for it more than for hidden treasure, who are filled with gladness and rejoice when they reach the grave? Why is life given to a man whose way is hidden, whom God has hedged in? For sighing comes to me instead of food. My groans pour out like water. What I feared has come upon me. What I dreaded has happened to me. I have no peace, no quietness. I have no rest, but only turmoil."
Okay, well, welcome everybody, and we're in part 9 on this series on the sovereignty of our God, the book of Job, and the subtitle today, The Deep Abysmal Darkness of Job. I couldn't figure out a more telling subtitle to get across the darkness that Job got into in terms of his situations of life. So before we get into chapter 3 now, I want to give us all a brief reminder of the total sovereignty of our God. Yeah. So turn to Isaiah chapter 45, the great prophet Isaiah. And we've been looking at the sovereignty of our God, and what happens so often on this subject is man tries to impose his own will on God's will and how he, God, should act. So often happens. We've all done it, and we hear it, we're surrounded by it so often. And we'll see that even further as we get into the book of Job. So man has his own will, yeah, and ideas as to how God should act. And that is a major part of all of our issues, by the way. Yeah, and especially in understanding what sovereign actually means in the scriptures. And I've called it my own kind of phrase, pouring God into our own molds. Yeah, instead of going to the scriptures and allowing the text to determine the molds, yeah, that we should be pouring them into, yeah, we make up our own molds, by the way, that God himself has already predetermined in the scriptures. Yeah, and we should be knowledgeable of that. But as you've probably figured out in life, Christians for the most part are not knowledgeable of it. Yeah, why? Because they don't get into the scriptures very often. So God knows all of that ahead of time, yeah, because he is sovereign and knows everything, and he continually nails it in the scriptures. So we're going to briefly look at actually one section of God's sovereignty and then get into chapter 3 today. And I did have two lined up to read, but I'm going to only read one, so we get through chapter 3 hopefully today. So Isaiah chapter 45. Chapter 45 and verse 9. Now listen up to this. Incredible. Isaiah 45:9. Woe to the one who quarrels with his maker, an earthenware vessel among the vessels of earth. Will the clay say to the potter, "What are you doing?" Or the thing you are making say, he has no hands. Verse 10. Woe to him who says to a father, what are you begetting? Or to a woman, to what are you giving birth? Thus says the Lord, the Holy One of Israel and his Maker. Now watch this. Watch out for the words me here and my and I. Yeah, throughout this section, the next couple of verses. Thus says the Lord God, the Holy One of Israel and his Maker. Ask me about the things to come concerning my sons, and you shall commit to me the work of my hands. And I've highlighted all of these in your notes, put them in red. Verse 12, it is I who made the earth and created man upon it, and I stretched out the heavens with my hands, and I ordained all their host. Yeah. So did you catch the words there? I, me, my. Yeah. You know, the section we'll read next week before we get into chapter 4, Lord willing, I'll read another section that's going to be really interesting in terms of God's sovereignty. So what I want to do is, I just want to read a section out of the words from the research paper I used in part 8, which I think will assist us in the next section. Let's go to chapter 3 of Job now, and we'll get into the next section. And we've pretty much completed the prologue. We'll dip into it a little bit before we get into chapter 3. But I just want to read this section from the research paper as we move into chapter 3, because it kind of clarifies what we're moving into in the next section. Yeah, because when we move from the prologue, we're moving into the poetic sections of Job, which actually is the majority of Job. You won't have figured that possibly out. But if you remember the overview, how we played that video, it actually pinpoints that. But this poetic section is pretty interesting, and as I say, I'm going to read a small section out of that research paper, which kind of clarifies a little bit about it. I'm quoting this now. Communicative clues may be unusual or striking devices and include repetition and alteration. Then there's a few quotes there. Continue that quote. In literary texts, and especially poetry, the individual words are carefully chosen, and the meaning is to a large extent tied up in the actual words. However, the literal meanings of the actual words are not necessarily what the author intended to convey. The words in poetry are often chosen for their semantic ambiguity, and therefore it can be difficult to apply semantic functional labels to constituents in a clause. As we have seen, for instance, a verb can fit into two or even three different process types depending on the interpretation. So the structure, this is me now, the structure is referred to as a binary poetic structure. So that's what we're moving into. And it's not probably something we're familiar with, any of us, but it simply means this. Binary poetic structure of Job simply means this. It means placing two ideas, and I'm quoting this now, binary opposition means placing two ideas or groups of people in opposing categories as a way to understand their relationship to each other. The term was originally coined in structuralism, but it is relevant to literature as well. So that's what we're moving into. So, you know, review that and have a feel for it as you read on in Job. There are just some things that we need to be aware of as we get into the chapters ahead. So we've got to look out for what? Opposing categories, don't we? As we read the following chapters in Job and the relationship to one another. Yeah? That's the point to get across. That's the point to figure out. So here we start to see a very different Job, don't we, as we move on. We start to see his realization of where he really has plunged to in his life. Yeah? Where he is now, he dives into a deep and very dark despair in the following chapters. And it's really hard to read and really hard to comprehend just how dark the situation of Job actually was. But this really communicates it so well. But the important thing is, Job does not curse God. But boy, does he curse his life. sure does. We're just going to see it. So I would suggest he's in a deep depression here. Yeah, he's just lost his whole life, essentially his whole life, other than his breath life. He's lost his possessions. He's lost his servants. He's lost his position in life. And last but certainly not least, Job has just lost his 10 children. Yeah. Who Job, as we saw, loved dearly. Yeah. So man, can it get any worse in life? Yeah. It's incredible. Now, let's look back a few verses to ensure we've got the context as we move into chapter 3. Go to 2:11. Now, when Job's three friends heard of all this adversity that had come upon him, they came each one from his own place. Eliphaz the Temanite, Bildad the Shuhite, and Zophar the Naamathite. And they made an appointment together to come to sympathize with him and comfort him. Yeah? Now, I think to myself, okay, how the heck did these guys hear about that? Yeah? Also, they didn't pick up their cell phone. Yeah? There had to be time involved for that news to travel to wherever they were. But they got the news. And what was the first thing they seemed to do? Hey, we're going to gather together and we're going to visit our friend Job so we can sympathize with him and comfort him. So I see the motives of these guys being really, really great motives. Yeah. Now, the outcome might be something totally different, but I really think they were really great friends. So these three friends, by all the evidence, look really sincere, don't they? And seem to have the correct motives for moving and going to see their friend Job. And we're going to learn in the next section and sections to come just how dangerous sincerity can be. Yeah, never forget it. And positive motives at times can, in certain situations, be really, really dangerous. And we're going to see it. But just watch their response when they catch sight of Job. On the garbage heap, by the way, outside of the city. Look at this. Look at verse 12. Then they lifted up their eyes at a distance and did not recognize him. They raised their voices and what? Wept. How many of us have one friend or three friends who would do that? Yeah? Who would absolutely be in absolute despair, raise their voices and cry. That's what they were doing. But look at this. And each of them tore his robe and they threw dust over their heads toward the sky. Wow. What a response. Now they're not, they can just see him, right? And they're already reacting in such a desperate way to the plight of Job. Yeah? But what a reaction. And you don't hear of anyone else in the vicinity, do you? We're not reading about anybody else in the vicinity here except his three friends. And remember, just a short time ago, yeah, Job was the greatest man of the East. How many people does he have around him? All indications are he's got three. Yeah. And we know his wife's not too far away, but we know he has three. Yeah. You know, where's CNN? Where's Fox? Yeah? Or his other close friends, they're not nowhere to be seen. Not one is even mentioned in this context. And I saw a quote the other day which I thought was really interesting. It's funny the things you come across when you're doing these teachings. But it was about never forget three types of people in your life. So listen up. Never forget three types of people in your life. One, those who helped you in your difficult times. Two, those who left you in your difficult times. And three, last but not least, those who put you in your difficult times. Yeah? Job must have been thinking something similar to that. He sees three guys on the horizon. They're crying their eyes out when they see him. They don't even recognize him. And they're throwing up dust in the air and tearing their clothes in pity for the man. Look at verse 13. But look at this. Look at what they do next. This is incredible. Three friends here. Then they sat down on the ground with him for 7 days and seven nights with no one speaking a word to him, for they saw that his pain was great. How many of us got three friends around our lives that will do that? His pain was very great. So they sat down on the ground with him for 7 days and seven nights with no one speaking a word for him, and they saw that his pain was very great. My goodness. Now when it says they were sitting on the ground beside him, where's Job sitting? On the crap heap of life, right? On the garbage pit. So they're sitting in the same place with Job, trying to sympathize with him, trying to relate to him. Fantastic men, yeah? I would suggest great motives that they started out with. So they're sitting in the garbage pit on the ground for a whole week. Can you imagine that? Boy, are these committed friends or what? Yeah? They're covered in flies, right? Probably covered in worms. And no doubt surrounded by rats. For 7 days and seven nights on the ground. Yeah? It's incredible. So after a whole week of silence, Job then breaks that silence. But just watch what Job talks about when he does break the silence. Yeah. Now you can imagine the silence building up inside Job. Yeah. All the thoughts of what's happened to him, everything that's transpired, his whole life has been ruined, and he's now on the garbage heap of life with three of his friends. Yeah. And we're going to see actually Job starts wishing for certain things to happen. But just watch what they are. Yeah. So Job 3:1. Afterward, Job opened his mouth and cursed the day of his birth. Now look at that word afterward. It's so easy to read over these short words. Yeah, afterward. After what? Well, I just went through it. He lost his position in life. He lost his family. He lost his possessions. He lost his servants. That's all embedded in that word afterward. Yeah. And what does he do? Opens his mouth and curses the day of his birth. Wow. But do you notice it doesn't say anything about cursing God? That's really important, because that's the main point of this whole record in Job. Don't forget chapter 1, chapter 2. Yeah, Satan's objective is to get him to curse God. Now, it doesn't mean he's not cursing everything else around him, but he's certainly not cursing God. And we saw it, didn't we, in chapter 2, verse 9. His wife asking him to bless God and die. But it's so easy to read these short words. So he refuses to curse and blame God, despite what Satan had said to him in 1:11 and 2:5. That's what Satan's objective was. I'm going to get this guy to curse God if it kills me. Because he said it in 1:11, didn't he? He said, "But put forth your hand now and touch all that he has, and he will surely curse you to your face." And 2:5 said, "However, put forth your hand now, touch his bone and his flesh, and he will curse you to your face." There's Satan's objective. Yeah? Clear objective that Satan had in mind for destroying the life of Job. So Satan's promise to God, "I am going to get Job to curse you to your face." And Job never does that. As I say, he may curse a lot of other things, and we're going to see it, right? But not his holy, sovereign God. Job never curses God. And this is one guy, wasn't it? One guy that we saw in Job 1:1, who was blameless, upright, fearing God, turning away from evil on the face of the earth. Never once blames or curses God. Now, bear in mind, Job does not know what the agreement was between God and Satan. Yeah, he doesn't know he's in the middle of this kind of wager battle between God and Satan, between these two spiritual, powerful beings. He has no clue about that. So verse 2, and Job said, "Let the day perish on which I was to be born, and the night which said a boy is conceived." And that's personification. You know, night doesn't speak, right? So it's a figure of speech. So Job's first wish is that he was never born. Incredible. Now, just in case we think Job should never have done that, yeah, think that, hey, you know, he's supposed to be a man of God, supposed to be blameless before God, shouldn't be doing that. Let's look at another renowned man and prophet of God who did the exact same thing. Ever heard of the prophet Jeremiah? Jeremiah is often referred to as the weeping prophet, and he had plenty of reason to weep. But are you getting the idea that being a prophet of God doesn't guarantee you a rosy life?
Yeah?
So far from it. So put your marker in Job and please turn to Jeremiah chapter 20. I'm going to read a short section there about the great prophet Jeremiah doing a very similar act to what Job's doing in chapter 3 here. So Jeremiah chapter 20, verse 14, "Cursed be the day when I was born." You get the message? Yeah? Here's Jeremiah. "Cursed be the day I was born. Let the day not be blessed when my mother bore me. Cursed be the man who brought the news to my father, saying, 'A baby boy has been born to you,' and made him very happy. But let that man be like the cities, which the Lord overthrew without relenting. And let him hear an outcry in the morning and a shout of alarm at noon. Because he did not kill me before birth, so that my mother would have been my grave and her womb ever pregnant. Why did I ever come forth from the womb to look on trouble and sorrow, so that my days have been spent in shame?" This is Jeremiah. He's got a whole book assigned to him in the Bible. Yeah? And he's just cursing the day he was ever born. So let's not be too critical about Job doing the same thing. Yeah? He was born and he wished it had never happened. So back to Job chapter 3 now. Now as we go into Job chapter 3, watch out for the word "it." IT. Not information technology, Steve. "It" refers to something totally different. Yeah? But watch throughout the next few verses how "it" is refers to the day Job was born. Yeah? And don't forget what I read earlier about binary opposition. You remember that? Binary opposition means playing two ideas or groups of people in opposing categories as a way to understand the relationship to each other. Yeah. So Job 3:4. "May the day be darkness. Let not God above care for it." There's the "it." Yeah. So watch out for "it" as we go on. "Nor light shine on it." Job, do you notice? Job even wants God to forget about it. The day he was born. Yeah? That's how desperate and how dark this level of life that Job had got to in this situation. Verse 5. "Let darkness and black gloom claim it. Let a cloud settle on it. Let the blackness of the day terrify it." Again, he hates the day he was born. The "it." Yeah? These verses are the reason for the subtitle today: "The Deep Abysmal Darkness of Job." This is how bad it can get in life. And this is how bad it got for Job in life. Absolutely desperate. Yeah? Look at verse 6. "For that night, let darkness seize it." Are you watching it? "Let it not rejoice among the days of the year. Let it not come into the number of the months." Now the word "seize" there is really interesting. It actually conveys a strong sense of seizing something, but not letting it go. Yeah? Incredible. Boy, he's focused on that "it," isn't he? He's focused on the day he was born. "Behold." Now "behold" is there to grab our attention for what's coming up. Yeah? It's like, hey, what's going on? Listen up. Right? "Behold, let that night be barren. Let no joyful shout enter it." Man, is he focused on the day he was born or what? So we have to watch this pronoun "it" all the way through. So we have to watch the pronoun. We have to watch the "it" all the way through this section. So verse 8, let those curse it who curse the day, who are prepared to rouse Leviathan. A good question would be, what the heck's that? Yeah. So Job here mentions those who curse the day. These were probably, in his time, professional enchanters and magicians who were thought to cast spells on certain days. And he's even trying to use these guys to curse it, to curse the day he was born. Yeah. And Leviathan was seemingly a deep-sea mythological monster of chaos. Yeah. Sort of like what we have back in Scotland today, the Loch Ness Monster. You ever heard of that? Yeah. Phenomenal tourist attraction. You would not believe the money the Scottish nation has made out of that lie, that there's a Loch Ness Monster. Yeah, even in the tourist game, follow the money. Yeah. So Job is wishing that these guys would arouse this monster up to swallow the day he was born. Man, are you remembering it? Yeah. Look at verse 9. Let the star of its twilight be darkened. Let it wait for light but have none. And let it not see the breaking dawn. Man, does he hate the day he was born or what? Because it did not shut the opening of my mother's womb or hide trouble from my eyes. Wow. Now watch out for some whys coming up. Yeah? Do you remember that in the video overview? The big question, why? Why is all of this going on in the life of Job? Yeah? And also be aware that Job's asking questions, and they're all rhetorical questions here. Something his friends, by the way, totally miss. So Job's not looking for their answers or comments or wisdom or advice on all these matters that he's bringing up. But boy, it doesn't stop them giving it to Job right in his face, as we're going to see and continue to read over the weeks to come. And we'll especially see that when we get into the next chapter, as they go about trying to answer them all for Job. Yeah, Job's not looking for an answer from his friends, despite their sincerity and their sympathy. Yeah. Look at verse 11. Why? Here you go. Why did I not die at birth? Come forth from the womb and expire. So look out for the whys coming up now. And we saw it, as I say, in the video overview. But these are all questions, as I say, rhetorical questions. Yeah. Job's not looking for the answers. Verse 11. Why did I not die at birth, come forth from the womb and expire? But do you notice Job's not talking about flying off to heaven at his death? Do you notice that? To be with everybody else who's already died. And up there, of course. Not. No mention of it. Because Job is where everyone else who has died, that's where he's headed for. Like all of us. Right, other than Jesus Christ, they're all in the grave and have turned to dust until the resurrection. Yeah, it's really key. Verse 12, here's another question. Why did the knees receive me? And why the breasts that I should suck? Now what Job starts doing is it looks at the benefit of dying. Yeah, now listen up for this. Because this is really key to understanding the dead are dead. No, they're not alive in heaven floating about on clouds with Jesus. So Job here starts looking at the benefits of dying, right? But do you notice Job doesn't even consider taking his own life, despite his despair and despite the abysmal darkness he's in. Yeah? Look at verse 13. For now I would have lain down and been quiet. I would have slept then and I would have been at rest. Exactly what happens when you die. You're laying to rest. And everybody talks about laying to rest. But what they actually are talking about, if you go that layer beneath what they're talking about, they're actually in heaven. Yeah. Or they're in a better place. Or they've passed on. No, they haven't passed on anywhere. they've passed on into the ground, into dust. So in Sheol, the grave, people are quiet. Why? Because they're dead. Have you ever heard a dead person speaking to you? No? Why? They've lost their breath life. They are dead. No life. So they don't speak in seances then? No, it's all one big lie. The dead are dead. Verse 14. Who else is there? Oh, they're with kings and with counselors of the earth who rebuilt ruins for themselves. Or with princes who had gold, who were filling their houses with silver. Or like a miscarriage which is discarded, I would not be as infants that never saw light. There, in the grave, this is what we're talking about. There, in the grave, in Sheol, there the wicked cease from raging. And there the weary are at rest. The prisoners are at ease together. They do not hear the voice of the taskmaster. The small and the great are there, and the slave is free from his master. Is that clear enough? Yeah? Look at verse 20. Why is light given to him who suffers, and life to the bitter of soul? Who long for death, but there is none, and dig for it more than for hidden treasures, who rejoice greatly and exult when they find the grave. Why is life given to a man whose way is hidden and whom God has hedged in? For my groaning comes at the sight of my food, and my cries pour out like water. For what I fear comes upon me, and what I dread befalls me. I am not at ease, nor am I quiet, for I am not at rest, but turmoil comes. But I want to point out here that Job saw the alternative options. What were they? Life or death? There was nothing mentioned by Job about an in-between option. Do you notice that? You know, an intermediary state. Nor does he mention going to heaven to be with anyone with his immortal soul. Yeah. So this book of Job does a great job of clarifying that the dead are dead. Now we know it's already been revealed in the scriptures that until the resurrection that Jesus Christ made available, by the way, by his resurrection, we will also lie dead in the grave, eventually turning to dust, if he does not return in our lifetime. Yeah. And then on the day of the Lord's return, we will also be resurrected if we are dead, or alternatively, gathered together in the clouds if we're alive on the day. Wow, what a hope. Yeah? The life to come. Man, but what a great hope if we meet the criteria of belonging to Christ. Yeah? What does that mean? Well, I'm sure it'll come up as we go along here in this series, what belonging to Christ actually means. And it's not saying you love Jesus. Yeah? Boys, how easy is that? Or praying the sinner's prayer. How easy is that? Yeah? But it does come about by you and I's obedience to the truth, which at times is not easy, to die to sin and live to righteousness. Yeah? To crucify your sinful flesh is not easy at times. Yeah. All right. Hey, try reading Galatians 5. Yeah. There's a big clue in there. Those who belong to Christ gives you the total definition right in there. Yeah. So there's your challenge for this week. One of your challenges. Right. And it tells us that the resurrection of first importance is for God's obedient people. Underline that in your heart and mind. Yeah. It's for God's obedient people. Not for somebody who does a worse. Not for somebody who's in perpetual sin. Yeah. Or habitual sin. Yeah. It's for his obedient people. That's key. Yet Job here, despite not having this great hope that we have, sticks with his God. Never curses his God. Yeah. Job was patient. Job endured.
regardless of his horrendous circumstances around his life. Such a great learning for us all here. And we saw it in James 5. The purpose of it was so much so for God revealing his compassion and his mercifulness to his people. Hard to get your head around. I know that. Yeah. But Job is suffering through all of this so that you and I can see greater God's compassion and his merciful nature towards his people. His great sovereign nature towards his people. Okay? So we'll get into it next week again. Next week, Ezra. And we'll get into it, Lord willing, next week. Okay? Amen.